Up next on Coast to Coast, we're going to be talking with Dr. Artie Clark about more encounters with star people. That's right, star people, next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dr. Artie Clark, professor emeritus at Montana State University, has dedicated her life, her career, to working with indigenous populations and spent years traveling through Belize, Honduras, Guatemala, Mexico, collecting stories of encounters, sky gods, giants, little people, aliens among these indigenous people as well. She has driven more than 12,000 miles, visited 89 archaeological sites, conducted at least 100 individual interviews of people whose experiences have not been influenced by movies, TV, or those who are hoaxed. Here's Dr. Artie Clark on Coast to Coast. Artie, welcome back.
Hey, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm great. I'm looking forward to this. How about you? Any more travels for you?
Well, you know, my new book, More Encounters with Star People, you know, deals with basically American Indians within the United States. So just traveling within the United States.
Were there any specific tribes that you interviewed, like the Hopi, for example?
Not the Hopi, but a lot of the native tribes in Arizona I did, in New Mexico, Montana, South Dakota, North Dakota, Idaho, Washington.
This
book is based upon American Indians who do not live on reservations. So that my first book, Encounters with Star People, all the participants were lived on reservations. But you know, the 5 million full bloods or mixed race American Indians in the country, 78% of them don't live on reservations. They're people like me who live in small towns, mm-hmm. rural areas, or cities, and we're called urban Indians. And although we may maintain contact with our reservations and participate in ceremonies, many people fall into that category. Others have no connection at all, but they're still American Indian blood. So I focused in this new book on those individuals.
How far back does your research go, Artie?
I would say now over 30 years.
Wow.
I have been collecting stories. I started out, and collecting traditional stories. I had grown up hearing traditional star stories, and so when I moved to Montana, I met a Northern Cheyenne man who told me some star stories. And I was just fascinated because I wondered how many other tribal groups actually had similar stories. And so when I would travel for the university and go to different reservations, if I had an opportunity when I wasn't working to ask people if they had any traditional star stories, I started collecting those. Well, then an outgrowth of that became these contemporary stories star people. I mean, there were a lot of people out there who had encounters and were individuals who just didn't have anybody to talk to. So before long, I found myself like a half researcher, half therapist, half friend.
Yeah.
Somebody they could simply tell what had happened to them. And, one of the things that all of this research has really made me aware of, I literally think there are millions of people out there who have had encounters and just keep it a secret. And they carry these secrets because they're so afraid. I mean, even today, with what we think is a more open acceptance of life in the universe, people are still afraid to talk about if they've had an encounter.
Mm-hmm.
I was recently at a a small community barbecue. It was after my first book came out. And there were about 10 people there. And this one man asked me, he said, "Well, what is your book about?" And when I told him it was about encounters with star people, he looked at me and he said, "You know, I've had an encounter." And five other people, two of them were medical doctors. One was a geologist who traveled the world looking for oil. And he told me that he had had three encounters in South America. There were two graduate students there who said they had had an encounter. And I was just amazed at people who came forth there in a non-threatening environment, who started talking about the things that had happened to them. And I think that we just don't talk about it in this society, that people, it's still a taboo kind of
thing
to admit to.
Now, in some of these cases, were they stories that the Native Americans had carried on since the 1800s and maybe carried them back?
No, these, you know, all the encounters, there are 39 chapters in this book, and every one of them is a contemporary encounter. None of them are the ancient stories. I plan to do that in my next book, is to, you know, tell the ancient stories and then follow them up with contemporary stories that seem to relate to the same kind of thing that had happened in the ancient legends of the people.
So let's talk about some of these encounters. What happened to these people, Artie?
Well, you know, I'll just talk about some of my favorites.
Okay.
Your
favorites will be our favorites.
Okay. The very first chapter, it's called Traveling the Universal Highway. I was up in northern Montana, and I had pulled off on the side of the road to take some photographs. I was on my way to Canada. I wanted to go see the writing on the stone park that's up in Canada. And it's has been known, I was told by a Blackfeet Indian that he knew of a man that had gone there and who had stepped into another dimension. And so it was rather famous in Montana for being a place where unusual things occur. So I wanted to go there. And it's a place where there are thousands of native hieroglyphics and pictures, pictographs, and different things that are there. So I was on my way there, and I pulled off the side of the road to take some pictures, and suddenly a man comes around this boulder. He introduces himself to me as Tom, and he invites me to have coffee, and I'm really quite reluctant to stay there. And he says, "You know, you don't have to worry. I'm okay. You know, and he starts telling me about his background. And he talks about traveling the Universal Highway. And he told me that there was a portal there, and that if you were there at the right time and it was open, that you could literally walk into this highway and you could go to other places in the universe." And he said that is how the star people travel back and forth. There are these universal highways all over the world. And he was telling me about when he was in Iraq. He was a veteran, and he had been in Iraq. That he had been sent in. His troop had been sent into this area where it had been rumored that Saddam Hussein was holed up.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they went there, it was an ambush. And he said he was trying to find cover in this city, and he stumbled into this building, and all of a sudden, this cavern opens up, and a being is standing there and beckoning him to follow him. And he says he follows him into this area where it's so cool, and outside it had been over 100, and was just very difficult to even breathe and move. And he said he went into this, and they offered to take him home. And they were couldn't understand his loyalty and why he would not leave with them. And they told him, well, we'll come back tomorrow. And if you want to go, just show up because we'll be here. Otherwise, we won't come there. And he told me about one star traveler who had come through, and he had taken them all throughout the different reservations here, and they were accepted by the brothers, and they had gone into ceremonies together. And I asked him, I said, well, he said, you would never know if you're talking to a star person. And I said, well, how would I know? Are there any clues? Because he said they some of them look just like us, and they come here and they stay. And I said, well, how would I know? And he said, well, have you ever met somebody who is very kind, very giving, someone who's always giving or caring for other people? And I said, yeah, I've met a few. And he said, well, you probably met a star.
Star person.
Star man, yeah. And then, you know, I got to thinking, my goodness, I wonder if he's one. You know, and it's really interesting because the response I'm getting from my readers, I mean, I'm getting dozens of letters, and everyone's writing about Tom because they're convinced he's a star traveler.
Are all star people good people?
I don't think so. I think that we're dealing with a lot of different
entities, aren't we?
Beings from from different places.
Did you encounter, though, through any of the Native American stories, Artie? Anything?
Well, you know, I
like
was
that negative, demonic.
You know, there were stories. You know, like I was down in Death Valley camping out one night, and I wanted to get away from the campground and the lights and just walk out a little ways into the desert and just look at the night sky. And all of a sudden, this man tells me that, speaks to me out of the darkness and tells me I need to be very careful. And as the conversation continues and he walks close to me where I can see him, he tells me his name is Jim Gray Dog, and he tells me he has been abducted and he has spent his life as a watcher in Death Valley, because he says that people who come there, and he says they are often taken. They most often take people who are alone, like backpackers. And
do they bring them back?
He said that most of them are brought back, but some of them aren't. And he keeps a record. He has a little notebook, and he writes all this down.
Oh.
The date that it happened and when it happened, he said, because someday it may just be important, you know, for others.
Sure. Now, on those who are taken and not brought back, why are they keeping them? Well, what are they doing with them?
I don't know. You know, I've heard some people who say that when they've been on spacecraft that they've seen other humans on those spacecraft that appear to be working with the aliens. I have heard that from more than one person that if you are an individual that has nothing to lose, if you don't have any family, if you want a new life, that the star people can give you one.
It's almost as if it's voluntary then.
Yeah, that many of the people who disappear actually are people who have chosen to go because they don't have any family, and the opportunity to begin a new life on another planet. And you know, they talk about how these star people can literally develop other planets and put humans on those planets, and you know, to develop a civilization.
Well, what do people describe the star people as looking like?
Well, it varies. You know, a lot of people talk about the first thing they see is a ball of light. And as that ball of light gets closer, it morphs into a human form. Others talk about seeing a human form, walking out of a beam of light. Others talk about, I interviewed a deputy sheriff who told me the story he was going home to visit his grandfather on the reservation, and it was late at night, and he had been on a drug team that had been working, and this was off the reservation, and they had found a meth lab or something, and they were dismantling it. And so he was a deputy sheriff, and he was given the next day off because they had worked so late at night. And he said that as he came not too far after he had crossed the reservation border, he came upon this UFO, and it was parked in the middle of the road, blocking his path. And he said he was trying to determine what he should do. You know, should he take his pickup and go down in the borrow pit and try to go around it? Or he said, obviously, they would know I'm here. And he was measuring how deep if he could possibly turn his pickup over. And so finally, he decides to just get his gun. And go into the borrow pit and just observe what was going on. And he talks about these entities that he saw that were, they were lizard-like. And he said at first he thought they were looking for him, but he said what they were after was there was a herd over in the field next to the road. And he said he watched them as they took down this steer. And he said then shortly thereafter they came back. And one of the things I thought was interesting is that so many of the people talk about telepathy and how they communicate with
right them. It's almost always that way,
right? But he heard them as though they were talking to themselves. He said it was a very guttural noise they were making, and it was he said that it wasn't anything that he would recognize as a language, but it was like syllables and hissing sounds. But he said that when they left, he climbed the fence and he went over to this cattle herd. And he said he found, an animal that they had mutilated and taken parts of the animal and left it there. And I said, well, what did you do? And he said, well, I drove home by the moon. I didn't dare turn on my lights because the next thing he said, I knew there were helicopters coming. And he said, I know they were from the airbase. And he said, I didn't want to get stopped and questioned because I didn't want to get involved. So he gets home, and his grandfather, now this is 3:00 in the morning, and his grandfather, who gets up in the middle of the night and watches TV because he can't sleep.
Or listens to the radio.
Or listens to the radio, right. And his grandfather was standing by the door. He was so upset. He says, he was talking to some man in the Philippines because his TV was gone. He said it was just a pink, nothing but a pink
static
shade on the... On his TV, and he was sure it was that UFO that he got over.
Artie, stay with us. We're going to come back. We'll talk more about some of these case histories of Native Americans and star encounters. Back with Dr. Artie Clark as we talk about our work, More Encounters with Star People. Our website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Artie, how many different species of ETs do you think you encountered through these research projects?
Well, they're the lizard-like people.
Right.
They're the giants. the little people. There are a blue people, a tall blue people. There are, of course, the tall ones that have the receding headline, receding hairlines, I'm sorry.
And, or headline.
The grays. Huh?
Or the or headline. They have big heads. Right. Who knows? And
so there are several different, you know, and some people, it's difficult to understand exactly how, because they'll say they look like insects, you know.
Like praying mantis, right?
Right. Or a grasshopper, or, you know, it's just really difficult to determine exactly what they have encountered.
But has anybody reported, has any of them reported, though, feeling as if some of these encounters were not pleasant?
Oh, yes. More so among the group that lives off the reservation than those who live on the reservation.
Why would that be?
Well, I think one of the things maybe is there's a strong spiritual connection, I think, with a lot of the elders and a lot of the people who told me stories in the original book were elders, and they had a different understanding of the star people than what some of the younger generation may have. Also, I think, you know, Native people off the reservation tend to be more educated, many of them having advanced degrees, some of them even having PhDs and MDs. So, you know, you're dealing with a group of people who ask more questions, who are more critical of what's happened to them, are more angry at some of the things that happened to them, and just not accepting of, they consider them abusive, that they are, take them without them having any say-so in what's happening to them, and they resent it, that they feel like that, you know, they're just being treated like lab rats.
Why don't you give us another story or two of some encounters as some of your favorites?
Well, one of my favorites was a character I met down in New Mexico. I called him Bo. He was a mechanic, owned a garage. And I got my fan belt broke on my Subaru, and I was out in the middle of nowhere, and I got a wrecker to come pick me up, and they took me to Bo's garage. And in the course of the evening, while he was repairing my car, and I was sitting there in the garage with him listening to his stories.
God, this sounds like a movie.
Not only that, he chewed tobacco, and one of the most fascinating things about him, he could sit in a platoon thing that was over about 5 feet away and not even stop. I mean, you know, and he was tattooed on everywhere except his face. And he, you know, he was a Vietnam vet. He was very proud of that. And he was, his father was not Indian, and his mother was Navajo. And he had a hard time growing up on the Navajo reservation. His father was a teacher, and his mother was, of course, a Navajo Indian woman who lived there. And so he had a great deal of difficulty being a, you know, half white, and I had gone to that area, you know, to investigate some old newspaper articles. I wanted to go to the newspaper office and look up some stories that I had heard about UFOs being sighted in
okay.
that area.
Okay. All right.
And pardon.
No, go ahead.
And so I was talking to the wrecker driver about this, and he said to me, he said, well, there's a lot more interesting encounters that have happened, you know, here. It's just that nobody knows about them. No, it's never been in the newspaper, and so he told me you'll have to ask Bo about the one at Four Corners. And so I told Bo, I said, I want to hear about this story about the UFOs at Four Corners. And he said that I would have to buy his breakfast to get him to talk. So
that's not a bad deal.
I know, that's what I told him. I said, that's the deal. Anyway, we went to this truck stop, and he told me that his wife had passed, and the two of them had gone up into the mountains. They used to go up into the mountains, and they would camp out for the weekend. And he said that after she died, he still went up to the mountains and camped out. And he said, you know, part, he felt closer to her. And he said also because, you know, a lot of people, when they have a lot of grief, they have one other people around them. And he said, I'm just the opposite. I want to grieve in solitude. And so he had gone up to the mountains and had planned the next day to go to a veteran ceremony. And as he was, he took his dog with him, and they had had dinner, and he was entertaining his dog. He claimed that his dog liked Western songs, so he'd take his guitar, and he would play these Western songs and cowboy songs. He would sing
Happy Trails, right?
Yeah, he said Tumbling Tumbleweed was the favorite of his dog. Anyway, he said that he was, this was after dinner, and he was lying on his back, and all of a sudden the stars disappeared. And he realized he could see the stars out of the corner, and he made out the shape of this enormous UFO. And he said the dog became extremely frightened, ran underneath the pickup, and stayed there and just whimpered. And he said, then as he watched, these smaller craft came out and headed in different directions. And he said, then this huge spacecraft left. And so, you know, he said he watched for a while, and finally he just went to bed. And the next morning he got up, and he made breakfast and prepared to go to the veteran ceremony. And as he's leaving and going down this hill where he had driven, he said all of a sudden he spies out down below him these smaller crafts. And there was and he said they were at this old copper mine, and that there were two different types of aliens. He said there were tall ones and there were small ones. And he said the small ones were going into this mine, and he said it was an abandoned mine. It hadn't been mined for years, to his knowledge.
Right.
And he said they would come out with these samples of ore. They would put them on this like a conveyor belt, is what he described, and they would be examined, and then they would be accepted and were placed onto the craft, or they were discarded. And he said this went on for hours. So then after they had finished, he watched them until they were finished. And he said they left. He said, so as he's proceeding on down the mountainside, he comes upon another one. And this one is drilling into the soil and taking samples out of the soil and collecting the samples, examining samples, and doing the same thing. So he said he decided that he was going to spend another night. He wasn't going to go to the veteran ceremony because he wanted to wait until these craft were gone and he could investigate further. So he said he actually went down to the area where they were, where he saw them. He said there was absolutely no evidence that they had even landed there. He said they had covered all evidence. And, you know, he said it was a sandy area, a desert like area. I don't know if sandy is like hard rock,
right?
Sand, you know. And he said no evidence whatsoever, but he said that they frequent that area. And he was telling me how he has a watch group, and they watch all the time because he feels very threatened by what they're doing. He thinks that they are looking for minerals that perhaps they need. And he said if they find them, who knows what they'll do.
Did any of these ETs, in any of these cases, ever share with the humans why they were here, specifically?
Well, I had this 90-year-old woman who told me, her name was Bertha, and she was a great-great-grandmother, Bertha. And she told me that she was abducted in 1942 and continued being abducted for years, just, decades.
Yeah.
And she told me that she asked them why, and that they told her that her DNA was close to theirs.
Hmm.
And they tried to explain to her what DNA was, and she had no idea what they were talking about. And she said, I don't even know if I know today, but I kind of have an idea because I watched it on the Maury show. And she said, she continued to explain what she thought DNA was. And she got up from the table and she went over to this drawer and she got out this notebook. And she said, I've kept a record all of my adult life of things that happened during the year. And she was going through this notebook and she came to the year 1974. And she wrote down the words molecule, which she spelled M-A-U-L-E-C-U-L-E, because she had no idea what the word was, but she sounded it out and spelled it that way. And then she had in small letters beside it, DNA. And she had written that down after that encounter. And they had told her that they needed her DNA to help them.
I've always suspected that that could be one of the things they needed to do. They needed they needed something from us. And I wonder, Artie, how many people they've been doing this to? Millions, you think?
I believe so. You know, one of the most interesting things I came across, and it's not in this book, but, I met a brother and sister who told me about, being repeatedly abducted, all of their lives.
Yeah.
And that neither one of them had children. The woman was convinced that the reason she didn't have children is because every time she didn't use the word ovulate, but that's exactly what she meant, where they took her eggs. And so she was never able to have her own children.
But they may have been making hybrids, right?
Right. And so she believed that the reason why young people today are having so much trouble having children is because they've been abducted and don't know it.
Huh.
And I thought that was an interesting.
It is.
Interesting idea.
Did these Native American encounters, did you sense that any of them, any of the people that you talked to, that they were scared or in shock or anything like that?
I didn't sense that they were scared or shocked. I sense the majority of them had heard star stories before, when they were growing up as kids. So those traditional stories had been handed down through the generations. But I did notice that they just did not feel that the aliens that we're visiting today were necessarily the aliens of their grandparents or their great grandparents.
They think they were different?
They think they were different, yeah.
Huh.
They don't think they're the same ones, because the ones that visited their But if you look at some of the stories, you know, of the ancient stories, I mean, some of the ancient stories talk about how these women come, you know, on a beam of light or a ribbon of light and take these men to the stars and make them their husbands and have all of these children. And when the earth husband says, I want to see my family, and they tell him, well, if you go back, you know, you're going to be, you know, you can't live there anymore. You can't leave us. And if you go back and you tell anybody where you've been, you know, you're going to die.
They're going to kill them?
They're just going to die. That's what the story says, you know, and so, and that happens.
What do you mean they're going to die? How?
Well, I don't know. Maybe they have ways. These are the ancient stories. And so, you know, you
sounds like a threat, doesn't it?
Well, it is a threat. And if you, because they don't want their husbands to leave. But these ancient stories talk about these kinds of things. So, you know, I think that there's more acceptance that these events do occur.
These encounters that have been going on since probably the beginning of time, are they still happening?
Yes. Every day.
With the same people?
A lot of them have encounters that carry on for decades, right? Some of them only have one encounter or are not familiar, do not know if they've had more than one.
Would they like these encounters to stop?
Many of them have expressed that to me because it's such an interference with their lives.
Yeah, I bet it would.
So many of them say, you know, we can't have a relationship with anybody because who's going to want to be involved with us when we tell them that, you know, we're having alien babies or, you know, sex with an alien woman or, you know, that,
or vice
that
versa.
If I disappear, you know, for 3 or 4 days, don't worry about me because I'll be back.
What do you think's happening, Artie? You've talked to enough people. What's your thoughts?
Well, I think there is definitely a super intelligence in the universe, far beyond and more technologically advanced than we can even imagine. And I think they do visit Earth. I think for some of them, they find Earth a very desirable place and who come here to visit. I think for others, they come here to scientific experiments. And for some of them, it may be a matter of life and death.
It could be. Stay with us, Artie. We're going to come back and continue chatting. I want you to describe what some of them say the craft might look like. And we'll take phone calls on our final hour with you on Coast to Coast AM.